Hello, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Eric Siegel, Acting Chair of the Club's Personal Growth Forum and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Our speaker is Janice Kaplan, award-winning investigative reporter, magna cum laude graduate of Yale University, New York Times best-selling author, and former editor-in-chief of Parade magazine, the most widely read publication in America. She's written many books and appeared on almost every TV show you can think of. She had seen the impressive research showing that gratitude can greatly improve one's sense of fulfillment and happiness, as well as improving productivity. Major corporations were finding that expressing gratitude wasn't a soft, flabby, and useless management style. On the contrary, it had notable positive effects on productivity. It got results. So she set out to do her own research and found out that expressing gratitude could transform every aspect of life, including marriage and friendship, money and career, and health and fitness. Getting advice at every turn from psychologists, doctors, academics, and philosophers, Janice decided to embark on a year of living more gratefully. And that's how the brilliant, deadline-driven executive changed her life. I'll let her tell you the rest. So it is now my pleasure to ask you to join me in welcoming to the Commonwealth Club of California our speaker, Janice Kaplan.
Thank you so much, Eric, and thank you all so much for coming. It's a pleasure to be here and get to talk about gratitude. I am, of course, grateful to be in San Francisco, grateful to be in the Commonwealth Club, but you're thinking she has to be grateful she wrote the book. And this is actually my 13th book, Lucky 13, I told my publisher. And as authors, of course, we're not supposed to have favorites. All of our books are our favorite children. Don't tell anybody, this is my favorite. And that's because writing it and getting to spend a year living gratefully really did change my life. And I'm going to give you the end of the talk right here at the beginning. By spending a year living more gratefully, I actually ended up having one of the happiest years of my life ever. And I'm so passionate about this book because I know that you can end up with one of your happiest years also. So move away from here, and let me tell you a little bit about how all of this happened. It started for me on a New Year's Eve, and I don't know how you all feel on New Year's Eve, but I always think that everybody in the world is having a better time than I am. And I was at a party in Manhattan, which is where I live, and I was in my little sparkly black dress and waiting for midnight to come. And it had been a perfectly good year. It had been a very nice year, but nothing that really made me want to put on a funny hat and celebrate. And so I started to think about what could happen in the coming year that would make it a really spectacular year. What could make it really, really special? And I thought, I started to realize that it really was not going to be the events that happened so much as my own attitude towards them. Because just about any good event that could happen, I could also see how I would see the other side of it, right? I could win the lottery, but then next year I'd probably be at this party complaining about how much I had to pay in taxes. Or I could move to Hawaii, and then I'd be complaining how I spent the year getting sunburned. And so I realized that I needed to think about my own attitude. Now, I was in a good position to do that because I had just completed a survey, a big national survey, that was sponsored by the John Templeton Foundation. And they had asked me to do a survey on gratitude and people's attitudes towards it. And the results started coming in, and they were really interesting. And I think the one that struck me most impressively was that something like 90 or 95% of people said that they thought grateful people were happier. And probably another 90 or 95% or that same 90 or 95% said that, yes, absolutely, they were grateful for family and friends when we asked that question. And I bet all of you sitting here tonight would agree with that, right? You probably think, yeah, I should be more grateful, absolutely, and that'll probably make me happier. And if I ask you, are you grateful, can you think of something you're grateful for? Are you grateful for family or friends? You probably go, absolutely, you bet. But then we ask the question, how often do you express gratitude? And all of a sudden, the number plunged. We were at like 45% said they expressed gratitude. So I looked at that, and here we have, on the one hand, something that we know is going to make us happier, and on the other hand, we just don't do it. So it seemed to me that we have a big gratitude gap in this country. And because, as Eric pointed out, I'm a journalist, I went on, wrote articles about this, and I went on TV talking about this problem of the gratitude gap. And then standing there at that New Year's Eve party, it struck me that I was as guilty of this as anybody else, that I probably didn't express gratitude as much as I should or would like to. And so that's when, indeed, I challenged myself and thought, all right, what would happen if I tried to spend the year living more gratefully? So because I am a journalist, I didn't want it to just be about me, and I spent much of the year talking to psychologists and neurologists and researchers and academics of all stripes, and combining their information with what I experienced myself. So I looked at family and friends and how the effect of gratitude on that. I looked at work, which we'll get into in a minute. I looked at health and fitness. And the results were really striking in so many different areas. So I had to plunge in somewhere to start the year, and I decided why not start at home, that I would start with my husband. And I would spend the first month, January, here we were, being more grateful to my husband. Now, I should say, I have a very nice husband. I've been married for a very long time. And maybe like a lot of you, I'd sort of stopped noticing him. Psychologists call this habituation. We want something, and we want it, and then we get it, and it becomes the baseline. It becomes the background to our lives, right? I call it the Porsche in the garage syndrome. After a friend of mine who just wanted a Porsche, for the longest time I heard about how much he wanted a Porsche, and then he got his Porsche, and that first day, first week, he was so excited, 0 to 100 in a second. I don't know what a Porsche does. And he talked about his Porsche, and he was all excited about it. And then a month later, he never mentioned his Porsche again because he had to drive to work in his Porsche. There was a lot of traffic. He just parked it in the garage. And all of a sudden, that fabulous Porsche was just the car in the garage. And who's grateful for the car in the garage, right? So what do you do when that happens? Well, I guess when the Porsche doesn't make you excited anymore, you can buy a Lamborghini. And probably a lot of you can. But you get the point, right? It's not going to be any different. So you get on this treadmill, and no matter what you think is going to make you happier and happier, it really doesn't until you stop and figure out that you should be grateful maybe for what you have right now. So that's what I decided to do with my husband because, by the way, you can trade in a Porsche for a Lamborghini. It's a little harder with a husband. So I started on a Friday night, and I mentioned we live in Manhattan, and we also were lucky enough to have a country house up in Connecticut. And it was a Friday night. We were driving up. It was a very snowy night. And we got to the house. We pulled in, and I said, "Honey, thank you for driving." And he said, "I always drive." And I said, "I know you always drive, but, you know, I'm a lousy driver. It's snowing. I don't like to drive. Thank you for driving." And he didn't say much. And over the course of the weekend, I thanked him for several other things, probably things that he does all the time, but that maybe I had just stopped noticing. And then came Sunday night, and we were having dinner, and we finished dinner, and he said, "Oh, honey, thank you for cooking." And I said, "I always cook." But you get the point, that the vibe between us had started to change. And noticing somebody and just expressing that you've noticed them really, really makes a difference. So, as I said, I wasn't going to do this on my own. I started calling some psychologists around the country to see if I was crazy or if this really could have been happening. And I spoke to one, actually, in Northern Illinois who was quite wonderful and has done a lot of neurological research. He's a neuroscientist in addition to a psychologist. And he told me that some of the research shows that the neural circuits in the brain can actually start to change when you express gratitude or when you express love. And there's a lot of research in this. You can read it in the book. But it makes sense in the most basic level, right? It's like lifting weights. If you lift a barbell, your arms are going to get stronger. If you're using certain neural circuits in the brain, they're going to get stronger. Another psychologist told me that he has a very simple technique that he does for all of his clients. He has them write an email to their spouse once a day. It's a simple fill in the blank. It simply says, one thing you did today that I appreciated was. Now, the guy who told me this is a marriage counselor, and he's married to a marriage counselor. And I said, do you do that? And he said, absolutely. I said, you're a marriage counselor. You can't talk to each other. Why are you sending emails? And he said, you know, it's a good question, but we always mean to tell our spouse that we appreciate them, right? But then the kids run in, the day gets busy, the rice is burning, and you kind of forget. And so if you make this a practice every day to actually do it, it makes a big difference. And again, I know it sounds simple, but try it. Give it a try. What's the negative? It really does make a difference. And by the way, in that survey that I mentioned before, one of the things we found out is that people are less likely to say thank you to their spouse than to the barista at the coffee shop or to the UPS guy who delivers their packages. So what's up with that? Well, I guess it, on some level it makes sense, right? All the barista has to do is get your cappuccino with the little heart on the top and you're really grateful, whereas our expectations for our spouse are a little bit higher. But on the other hand, it's a reminder that sometimes we forget to appreciate the people who we most should appreciate and for whom it's going to make the biggest difference in our lives and their lives. And one other thing on that topic is that we sometimes think that if we say thank you to somebody, if we say thank you to our spouse, we're making them feel good. The secret is it's making you feel good, that when you're grateful, it really comes back and reverberates to yourself. So the next topic that I looked at was work. And as I've been giving these talks or speaking to different groups since the book came out, one of the things I've found is that people care about being appreciated at work almost more than anything else. And the surprise in that same survey was that we are less likely to express gratitude at work than almost any place else. I think only 7 or 9% of people said they actually ever said thank you to a colleague or to their boss. And as I've spoken to people, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. And I also think it's a huge mistake. One of the things I heard a lot as I spoke to executives as I was researching the book was that same line that you hear on Mad Men. Remember that TV show? And I think Don Draper said it to Peggy at one point, which was, we say thank you with a paycheck. Well, guess what? You don't say thank you with a paycheck. You say we're paying you with a paycheck. You say thank you with thank you. And that's a big difference. And a lot of companies, particularly perhaps the kinds of companies many of you work for, are starting to realize that. I gave a talk a few weeks ago at at Google's UK headquarters, and they make a big point there, and they probably do in this country also, of having, there's actually something they call, I forget what they call it, G-Thanks, which is their platform for colleagues being able to say thank you to other colleagues and actually being able to not only give kudos but to give little gifts. Now, if you work at Google, you probably don't need the extra $25 or $50 from your colleague, but it means a lot. And they have something called the Happy Wall, or this office did, where they would post, obviously that wall is online, it's not a real wall, but where they would put up comments and emails that they would send to each other. And it really makes a difference because many of us work for a paycheck. We want to get that paycheck, but we also want to be appreciated and we also want to find some meaning. I think a lot of executives feel that if they say thank you to people, they're less powerful, that they should show their power by not saying thank you. That survey, we found 81% of people say they would work harder for a grateful boss. And 90% of people said they thought a grateful boss was more likely to be successful because people would rally around him or her. And nobody succeeds on their own. So there you have it. You have people are more likely to work hard for you, and you're more likely to be successful. Again, it's hard to think of a downside to doing this. Let me tell you one story that I encountered as I was working on the book. There is a CEO for Campbell's Soup. His name is Doug Conant, and some of you may know him or have worked with him. Doug was the CEO for 10 years. I think he left in about 2011. And when he came in, Campbell's was not in the best financial shape, and he did what everyone does to turn that company around. And one of the things he also did was really to change the culture in that company. And he said that he handwrote something like 6 or 7 handwritten thank you notes every single day. And he had somebody on his staff whose job was actually to look for people in the company who he should thank. And it wasn't just his direct reports. He would send a thank you note to the guy who was packing the boxes in Atlanta or the person who was on the assembly line in Shanghai. And, of course, that drifts down, right? The CEO is doing it, then the managers start doing it, and everybody starts doing it. And all of a sudden, you have a culture where people are recognizing each other, and people are saying thank you, and people are actually feeling good. And remember, those are the people who are representing your company also. There's an interesting twist, or a very poignant twist to the story, which is that towards the end of his tenure at Campbell's, Doug was in a terrible car accident on the New Jersey Turnpike where his driver actually fell asleep. And he was almost killed, and he ended up in the ICU for a couple of weeks. And as he was in this precarious health position, letters started coming in from around the world. And for the 2 weeks that he was there, his wife was sitting at his bedside and reading those letters. And many of the letters said things like, "Dear Mr. Conant, you don't know me, but 5 years ago, you wrote me a thank you note for something that I did." And I was so stunned to get that, because it never occurred to me that the CEO would even know I existed, never mind write me a thank you note. And we put your note up on the refrigerator because we were so proud of it. And so you've felt like part of our family ever since, because you've been up there. And now that you're in trouble, know that our thoughts and prayers are with you. And I was just very moved by that story, because it's not why he did it. It's not why he wrote those thank you notes. But doing that, putting that kind of goodness and caring into the world, giving to somebody who works for you, does come back and does come back around to you. One other reason that I think people are sometimes afraid of gratitude, where it seems a little bit too soft and sappy, particularly when we're talking in the workplace, and by the way, I'm from New York, I am neither soft nor sappy, is that I think people worry that if they're grateful for what they have now, it means they're not going to get anything else. And one of the things that I discovered in the course of the year was that gratitude and ambition can play very nicely together. I knew for myself that if at the end of the year I felt that gratitude had just been a pat on the back, if it had just been a way of being placating and saying, "Oh, yes, everything you have is just fine," that wasn't going to do it for me, because that isn't what my life is about and not what I wanted. And I think it's what so many people fear about gratitude, right? You think like, well, if I'm too accepting of what I have, can I ever get anything more? And it's really, really important to realize that, yes, of course you can. It's okay to stop and appreciate where you are this moment, to appreciate what you have this moment, and to still say, okay, but next year I'd like to have that, or next month I'd like to have that. But if I don't get that, I can also appreciate where I am right now. And it's a really important distinction that I think can make a big difference for a lot of people. So, if we know gratitude is good for us, if it can make us happier at home and at work, why aren't we doing it? Well, there are a lot of psychologists now who believe that we are actually wired to look at the negative, that it goes back to our ancestors who were out picking berries in the forest, right? And it was really important for them to know which was the one poisonous berry. If they paid attention to the 10 tasty berries and they didn't know which was the one poisonous berry, they did not become our ancestors. So we are very much wired to pay attention to danger. And on a certain level, that makes sense. But most of us are now only picking berries at the grocery store, or excuse me, I'm in San Francisco at the farmer's market. And so maybe our attitudes need to be a little different. Because what that berry picking has now turned into is that your kid comes home from school with a report card with 4 A's and 1 B, and what do you say? "Huh, what happened in that class that you got a B? Do you want me to talk to the teacher? Is there anything I can do?" we just always focus on the negative. Think about it. When you come home from a day, you've had 10 good things that happened in the day and one bad one, which is the one you discuss with your spouse at dinner? The bad one. It just is how what we tend to do. But as soon as we change that focus, as soon as we decide that we're going to look for the positive one, we really can. And it really changes our attitude. There's a woman from down south who told me a lovely story as I was researching the book. She runs a big nonprofit. And she's also a young mom, had three little kids under the age of six, I think. And she would get in her car to drive home. And she would, as so many of us do when we have time, would think about everything bad that happened that day. She would think about everything negative that somebody in her company had said to her and every problem that she had. And then she would get home and be even tenser, and then her kids would come running up, and it was just too much. And she realized she had to change that. So she decided that what she was going to do was take that 20-minute drive home and turn it into a ride of gratitude. And she was going to take that 20 minutes and think only of the good things that had happened that day, only of the nice things that people had said to her and the good things that she had done. Now, again, it didn't make the bad stuff go away, right? She was still going to have to deal with those problems, but there was not a lot she could do about those problems in those 20 minutes as she was driving home. And having that 20 minutes to drive and think only in a positive way put her in a completely different mood, and she got home and felt great, and was able to have a great evening with her kids and then go back the next day to work and really deal with the problems. And I love that, because we all have 20 minutes that we're driving somewhere every day, right? Use it as if you have a commute, think of doing that. If you're driving to the grocery store, think of doing that. One man I spoke to told me that he tries to be grateful every time he turns on the water. Now, I guess in San Francisco, that makes a lot of sense. He was not from San Francisco. But his explanation was that, you know, he realized that there are a lot of people around the world who don't have fresh water. And when he turned on the water, he thought about that. Now, I guess there are a lot of people in San Francisco who don't have as much water as they'd like either. But it's not a bad idea. I turn on the water too many times a day to actually do that, but I did adapt it for myself to try to think about that when I'm brushing my teeth. There's not a lot else to do in the 2 minutes that you're brushing your teeth. And you could use that 2 minutes to think about positive things or to think about something that you want to be grateful for. So why does this work? How does this work? Well, a lot of people talk about gratitude journals. I think gratitude journals sound complicated. It sounds like a school assignment, like you're going to have to write a lot. So that's why you have those little cards on your chairs, because my thought is really think of a gratitude journal as a scrap of paper that you keep by your bedside. And do this now or do it later. Jot down one thing. Jot down one thing tonight that you're grateful for. And it really can be anything. So how does this work? How can jotting down one thing in the course of a day change your day? Well, think of it this way. You know you're going to do it, right? You're going to do it for 1 week. You're going to take this card, and for 1 week, every night, you're going to jot something down on it. So tomorrow morning, you wake up. It's 9 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whenever you wake up, and you have your first cup of coffee. And you go, wow, that was a really good cup of coffee. I am so grateful for that cup of coffee. Guess what? You're done. You have it for the day. You've got your thing you're grateful for. You don't have to worry again. But just thinking about that one little thing has changed your attitude for the day. All of a sudden, you've put yourself in that positive mindset. You've put yourself in that positive outlook. Or maybe it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you go, oh, gosh, darn it, I've had a rotten day, and I haven't thought of a single thing to be grateful for. And so now it's 5 o'clock, and you make yourself stop, and maybe you look outside, and you say, I'm grateful that I get to have this beautiful view from my office, that I'm getting to come to the Commonwealth Club tonight, or that I'm walking on this pretty street. And you've stopped and you've turned your day around. And you've stopped and you've given yourself a different frame for your day, a way of looking at something positive. And again, just that one little moment of doing that is really going to make a big difference. Another way that gratitude has a big effect on us is our health. And I guess I shouldn't have been surprised as I was when I started doing some of the research on gratitude and health, right? We should know by now that there are huge mind-body effects. We've heard about them enough in so many different ways. But the research on gratitude is really, really impressive. That gratitude lowers depression. It lowers blood pressure. It lowers stress. It helps you sleep better. And there's really good and impressive research on a lot of that. What struck me as particularly important is that there's new research showing that gratitude lowers the inflammation in the body. Now, if you read any journals, you know that inflammation is the new word everybody talks about in terms of the effects that it has on so many different illnesses. We all have our vulnerable points that perhaps stress or inflammation or whatever it may be cause. For some people, it's stomach aches. For some people, it's back aches. For me, it's headaches. I've always had migraine headaches. And as I was doing more and more research on this and on the effects of gratitude and how gratitude can affect your health, I had my big plan for what I was going to do next time I got a migraine headache and how I was going to use gratitude to get rid of it. Well, there was sort of a problem, which is that I never got another migraine headache while I was writing the book in that year. Now, I'm not going to write this up for any medical journals because this is a bit anecdotal. But I did call several doctors and say, could this be? And I spoke in particular to Mark Laponis, who is the medical director of Canyon Ranch, which you may know is a big spa all over. And Mark treats what he calls the worried well, which I think is what most of us are. And we had a long conversation about how indeed that could be, that indeed spending a year being grateful, or at that point I think it was about 6 or 8 months, really had changed the inflammation levels in my body and possibly really did change my migraine headaches. And I'm happy to say they have rarely come back since. So again, I have no medical proof here, but it's probably worth trying. Gratitude has also had a huge effect on depression, and the research on that is also really, really impressive. One doctor I spoke to at Mass General Hospital named Jeffrey Huffman does research on severely depressed and suicidal patients, and he told me that one of the biggest, most successful interventions he has done or ever can do is to have people write a letter of gratitude. And that's sounds like something very simple. Think of somebody from your past who you're grateful to. It could be the guy who gave you your first job. It could be a clergy person. It could be a teacher. And write them a letter and tell them why you appreciate them. Now, apparently, if you actually go and read this letter to the person, you will all cry and everybody will feel better and you will also be more grateful. But just send it off to them, because it's actually the act of writing it that has such a profound effect. And research has found that it can actually lower depression for weeks after you write the letter. And as I said, this particular psychiatrist who does extensive research in this found that writing that letter can have as big an effect as many, many other interventions that he has done. Again, worth a try. Cheaper than most of the medicine you can buy. There are so many wonderful ways that you can unpack gratitude this way. And I mentioned depression in particular because I've been lucky in my life. And I was going from the position that perhaps a lot of you will be, which is I'm basically have a good life and I'd like to make it better. And I was able to find that gratitude did that. But in the course of the year, I also spoke to so many people who've had great difficulties and great problems in their lives. And I was so struck by how they were able to use gratitude to find a bit of brightness and to find something that could help them through in the worst times. And I think that's really important to remember, because I said before that we sometimes wait for events to make us happy. And that if you wait for events to make you happy, you're going to be waiting a long time. And it's important to remember that what gratitude does is give you a deeper resonance and a deeper ability to say, I don't always have control over something. If I do have control over something, go ahead and change it. But if you don't, then you can stop and be grateful for what you have, no matter how difficult the situation is. I'm going to give you a completely simple and silly example of how that happened, how I did that. in that same idea of looking for something bright and reframing a situation. So it was while I was writing the book, as I said, I live in New York. It happened to be an extremely cold, wintry, and blizzardy season when I was writing this book. And I was walking down the street one day in my from my Midtown apartment. There was a blizzard going on. It was snowing like crazy. And, you know, I was huddled into my coat, and I was fairly miserable. And somebody was who worked in a building nearby was shoveling and didn't see me, I assume, as I was walking down the sidewalk. And he picked up a big shovel full of snow and threw it right back at me. So as you can imagine, in my most ladylike and polite tones, I screamed at him and told him to please watch what he was doing and how dare he, and I stormed on down the street. And then I stopped and I went, I'm writing a book on gratitude. I'm not allowed to do that. And so I stood there for a really long time with the snow coming down, and I thought, how can I possibly be grateful for standing in a blizzard and having somebody throw snow at me? And I thought, all right, you got to do this. So I thought, well, first of all, he's shoveling and I'm not. That's good. And I live in a neighborhood where people actually shovel, so I'll be able to walk on the sidewalk tomorrow. All of a sudden, I felt a little bit better. And so I turned around and I actually walked back down the street and I called out to him, and this poor man, you know, this woman who had just yelled at him and is now coming back, and I called out and I said, thank you for shoveling. And he looked at me like I was indeed crazy, and then I turned around and walked away. So I don't know if it made him feel any better, but it certainly did make me feel better. And it did what I mentioned before. It allowed me to reframe a situation. And it allowed me to see that in a very different way. And it stuck with me so that this year, that it didn't snow very much in New York, but when we did have one bad couple of days and I was walking down the street with my husband, he finally said to me, you don't have to thank everybody who's shoveling. but you do start to feel that way. You do start to think, how can I look at this and how can I feel better about it? Because nobody else is going to make me feel better about it but me. And so I might as well be the one who does that. On those note cards, I said before, what do you do if you've had a bad day, if there's not been anything that sounds great? I was with a woman actually who used to work for me at Parade, and we were chatting and I was talking about this, and she said to me, well, you know, I've kept a gratitude journal for 17 years. I said, are you kidding? She didn't seem like the type. And she said, yes, and I've never missed a night. And I said, really? She said, yes, I absolutely will not let myself ever miss a night. And then as we were talking, she paused and she said, I wonder what I wrote the night my mother died. And I wonder what I wrote the night I got fired from my job. I would like to say I was not the one who fired her. And she was kind enough to go home and to look for those journals, and she's obviously better organized than I am because she found them immediately. And she emailed me the next day that she had found the journal from the night her mother had died. And she had written in it, so glad that I have my dad and my sister to help me through this. And I loved that because, again, it's really what gratitude is about. She couldn't change the circumstance. She was sad, and she was going to be sad. But she wanted to stop and find a way to make herself feel better. And she wanted to stop and find a way to look at something from a different perspective. And that's what we can do for ourselves. Gratitude gives us control back over our own lives. And what more can we want? It gives us the two things that I think we probably want more than anything in our lives, which is some hope and some control. It allows us to know that whatever the situation is, we're going to be able to find a way to look at it differently. We're going to be able to find a way to look at it differently. And I'm going to stop in a minute and take some questions, but to stick with that for one moment, gratitude is very much a part of just about every religion. And if you have religion to help you with gratitude, that's wonderful. I wrote this book for people who were sort of like me and who were just very looking for a secular way to find that same comfort. But there is a monk, and I don't usually quote Benedictine monks, but I'm going to, and his name is David Steindl-Rast, and he's written a great deal about gratitude. And he has the wonderful line that it's not happiness that makes us grateful, it's gratitude that makes us happy. And I love that because I think it's exactly what we need to remember, that we can't wait for the things that are going to make us happy, because it's not happiness that makes us grateful. It's gratitude that makes us happy. And I hope you'll all remember that. I hope you'll all fill out your cards, have a chance to read the book, and have a chance to find happiness and gratitude and also the best year of your lives. Thank you. I am happy to take some questions. Yes.
I have a question. So if I understood you correctly, it sounds like you just need to be grateful. Like, it doesn't have to be this profound thing. Like, you can be grateful that there are umbrellas on a rainy day. That's what it sounds like to me that you're saying. And you can be grateful for the bigger things. Is that correct?
I think absolutely. The question was, can you be grateful for small things and big things, whatever they may be? And I think it's a great question because I think the answer is yes. You can write down on that card, you know, grateful for the cosmos, or you can write down, you know, grateful that I got new shoes today. And both in different ways may make you feel good. And I think it's really just a question of having that ability to try to frame your life or your day or your experience in a positive way. Yes?
Yeah. You mentioned you have gratitude when you brush your teeth at night, and you also said it's normal to think of the negatives throughout the day. How do we become aware of when we're thinking a negative and then constantly change it to a gratitude so there's no negative thinking in our life anymore?
The question is, how do you turn things around so there's no negative thinking in your life anymore? I'm not sure you can have no negative thinking in your life. I think it's going to be there. But I think what happens when you start, if you take that week and think about being grateful and tell yourself that just for that week you're going to write something every night and make that part of your life, you will be surprised how much of a habit it becomes. And you're going to catch yourself. You're going to find yourself. And it's what's happened so dramatically with me. You know, after my year ended, I thought, oh my gosh, am I going to slip back now and just be negative about things again? And fortunately, I have a husband who reminds me when I get cranky and, you know, he'll say, hey, Ms. Gratitude, are you sure that's what you want to say? But you also catch yourself. And I mentioned that I was in London giving that talk, and my husband did come with me, and we flew into London, and we arrived at Heathrow, and we're all excited to be there. And, you know, we go off the plane, and we go down, and there's one of those lines at customs that's an hour and a half at least. And, you know, I said before, if there's something you can do about a problem, do it. There's nothing you can do about a customs problem, right? That you're standing there and you're going, oh, look, there are three agents. That's good. Now there are two agents. Now there's one agent. Where did that one agent go? Why are there no agents there? So I'm getting crankier and crankier. And then suddenly I stopped and I actually turned to my husband and I said, I think it's time to play the gratitude game. And so I said, oh, I'm so grateful that we're in London, that we're going to get to do this and that. And people are sort of looking at me. And then he goes, all right, and I'm grateful for whatever. And people around us started laughing. And we continued. And all of a sudden, our mood changed. And was it forced? Was it silly? Of course it was. But people around us started laughing, and I think everybody standing there felt better. And I think that's what you can do. I think it's you start to catch yourself. You start to realize that you're frustrated, you're irritated, you're standing in line at the grocery store, and why is that person in front of you so slow? Or you're in traffic, and why is it so terrible? And you say, what's good? I'm in traffic because I'm on my way to visit my son. I'm in traffic because I'm on the way to see a great show, and yeah, maybe I'm going to be 5 minutes late for it, but I'm going to get there. And aren't I lucky that I get to go to that?
How do you actually catch yourself? You said you catch yourself. What's the secret of catching yourself?
Well, I think as you start to keep a gratitude journal or gratitude notes, as you start to think about it, as it becomes part of your consciousness, you'll want to do it. You'll want to make yourself. Yes?
You mentioned that in your study, only 7% of people at work express gratitude. And I was really struck by that because, well, I've never received a handwritten note from the CEO about something. I feel like you know, maybe it's not for finding the thing I most want them to recognize about me, but people say thank you, and, you know, I really appreciate that, and things like that. So how do you reconcile, am I just like the luckiest person?
Well, I'm delighted. The question was that... this lovely woman said that people do say thank you at work, and maybe it's not always for the thing she wants them to say thank you for, but she does find appreciation at work, and I think that's great. And I think if the culture is starting to change and we're starting to do more of that, that's a wonderful thing. I'll tell you one quick story about that, is that I was out for dinner with a friend of mine who's a partner at a big corporate law firm in Manhattan, and it was about 8 o'clock at night. We were having dinner. He excused himself for a moment and made a phone call, and I heard him saying, obviously, to one of his associates, and I need that on my desk at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And he hung up, and we continued eating, and I said, well, does that mean that guy is going to have to work all night for you? And he said, yes. And I said, are you going to say thank you when you get in the morning? And he said, no, it's his job to do what I ask him to. Now, may I say, he had read my book. And so I said to him, okay, how about this? Why don't you stop at Starbucks on your way in tomorrow and buy him a cup of coffee? And when you come in, put the cup of coffee on his desk and say, thanks, I know you were up all night. And my friend sort of smiled, and he said, yeah, that's a great idea, because the coffee will keep him up for the rest of the day. So I'm glad to hear that you get thanks at work. And I think that one thing that's important to remember is that it does multiply. And if you're at a place where it's not coming from the top, express thanks to your colleagues. You know, sometimes people worry that they don't want to share credit or whatever it may be that keeps them from saying thank you. Again, I think that's a wrong approach. I think that you get more by appreciating the people, and I'm very glad to hear that your office or workplace is one of them where thanks occurs. Yes.
I love your story about the migraine headaches going away for the year. I'm curious, though, at what point in time, you referred to it as anecdotal, and I get that, but at what point in time does an anecdote or a series of anecdotes become a harbinger of a fundamentally different approach to health, one that's drug-free, one that's utterly affordable and universally available? Why is it that such amazing breakthroughs are always dismissed as anecdotal?
That's a great question. He was asking, why is it that we dismiss things like the story I told about the migraine headaches as anecdotal, and when are we going to have a fundamentally different approach to health where we recognize those connections? And I think so much research is going on now that hopefully that will start to change. And you're right. I mean, my story is anecdotal, but I think there is a lot of research that is starting to show the power of our, you know, I read them in the New York Times once a week. There's one story after another showing that that our minds are as powerful as most of the drugs that we take. And I'm sure many of you are doctors or psychiatrists and have had the same or different experiences. But I think as more research gets done on that, and I think it needs to be done, because I think we need to be able to have the information and actually see it. And I think it is starting to come in. Yes.
Well, notwithstanding the recognition of gratitude as a wonderful thing, I want to say something in the defense of negative thinking. Because I'm one of the more negative people in the world, so I'm an expert on that. But I do find, and I am often not as grateful as I should be, and always actually not as grateful as I should be, but I want to make the point that sometimes when I have negative thoughts, I work over the negative thoughts again and again and again, and these are problems that I'm tortured with, and eventually something good comes out of them, and I'm just like solutions or semi-solutions. Am I right? Anyway, I wonder if other people have had that experience or whether you do in favor of negativity.
He's just asked the person who wrote the gratitude diaries if I could speak in favor of negativity. you know, I told you the story about my my husband and who I was grateful to, and his fear at the end of the year was that my next book is going to be called The Revenge Diaries. it's an interesting question, and I happen to know that the person who asked it is a psychiatrist. and it was whether if you focus on negativity and that going over and over a problem will help you solve it. And, you know, I'm not sure that there's really any conflict in what we're saying, because I don't think that's negativity. I think that's recognizing that there's an issue that needs to be dealt with. And of course you have to do that. And there's nothing about gratitude. You know, I said gratitude is not supposed to be placating, and it's not supposed to be a pat on the back, and it's not supposed to be telling you that everything is okay. So I think what you're saying and I'm saying are not in disagreement, that if there's a problem, of course you should be dealing with it, and of course you should go over it, and of course you should think about how you could solve it. What I'm suggesting is that it doesn't have to take over so that there's you're unable to see anything good, and that when there are difficulties, you deal with them. When there are difficulties that you can't deal with, you deal with those in a different way, which is to say, how can I find something that's going to help me through with it? So I think the fear that, as I said before, that if we're grateful, we're not going to be ambitious or we're not going to get to the next step is a problem, and we need to realize that the two of them can coexist. Yes?
So some people say that the increased use of social media... Some people say that the increased use of social media like Facebook and Twitter and so forth has made people feel more negative by comparing themselves to others and so forth. And do you have any take on social media and the increased use of that?
I love that question. Thank you. And the question, well, you just heard it was about social media. And, you know, we've seen a lot about that, right? That that people post on Facebook all these positive things about their lives, and the rest of us have Facebook envy, and it's causing all of these major problems, and there have been lots of articles about that and how our lives are distorted because we want the fabulous lives that we read about that our friends have on Facebook. I think that's nuts. We're all grown-ups, right? We all look at Facebook and know that our friends are posting positive things. And what do we post on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media you use? We're also posting positive things. And we're also posting the pictures of our children smiling. We are not posting the pictures when they're crying. And so, in a way, I think social media can be seen as a great tool for gratitude because it's doing what we've been talking about for the last hour, which is looking at the positive side of things and looking at the bright side of things. And so, in some ways, I think we should be praising social media for that. And I think it's also a tool that we can use with our kids because I hear a lot of people talking about how ungrateful their children are, you know, at kids particularly in their early 20s. And social media can be a way that the whole family can do things together, right? Why don't you all decide that, what's tonight, Thursday, that every Thursday you're all going to post on Instagram a picture of something you're grateful for. And it becomes a little family project that you do together. And nobody else, if they're embarrassed about it, nobody else has to know what that picture is that they're posting. But you all know it, and it becomes a little tool that you can use. So I think finding a way to use social media in a positive way and see that what we're doing is really on Facebook, in a way, posting our own gratitude journals, right? We're putting up all the good stuff about our lives. We're spinning our lives in a positive way. And you can look at that as a very positive thing. Yes.
Looking at happiness or the combination of both happiness and sadness, say on a spectrum where as bad as it gets, you're severely clinically depressed and you're at risk of suicide, as opposed to the polar opposite being something that I'm not aware of. But if you have the power to change that's not to say I'm unhappy. I'm saying, if you have the ability through rewiring your brain, through choosing to think negative thoughts and at the highest or at the most extreme of levels being severely depressed if they're negative, is there such thing as a mindset that's achievable that's equal to the opposite being severely depressed, is there something past happiness, this elated type mindset that you could achieve through this gratitude or expressing gratitude? And if so, is it different than happiness?
I think gratitude is different than happiness. I think happiness can be what we started off talking about before, being an event, being you wait for something that's going to make you happy, and in that way it comes and then it goes, and it can be quite ephemeral. When positive psychology first became popular about 20 years ago, and it was actually a professor at the University of Pennsylvania named Marty Seligman, who's sort of considered the father of positive psychology and turned psychology around from being how do we fix problems to how do we make people happier. And Marty told me that they started with happiness as the gold standard, that what they wanted was to make get people to the highest level of happiness. And in the last few years, they've changed that. And they've stopped using the word happiness as the gold standard, and they've changed it to well-being. And well-being incorporates other things. So it incorporates what you're describing as happiness, but it also incorporates purpose and meaning and those gratitude and those deeper and richer areas. And one of the findings out of his lab within the last 6 months, actually, is that one of the biggest contributors to what they are now calling well-being is gratitude. And so, yes, I think there is something bigger than happiness, and I think we can call it well-being, we can call it whatever word people are going to come up with next, but it is that idea of incorporating gratitude, purpose, meaning, and joy into your life.
In your travels, have you found that the expression of gratitude is a cultural thing, that it might be different, for instance, in Asian countries or in European countries, and or even in regions of the United States?
That's a great question, and I've not done anything international in, you know, other than my book has been published in about seven different countries, and I do not know what the cultural differences there may be. One of the findings we had when we did the survey was that in almost every area, women were more grateful than men. And the one area that women weren't more grateful than men was at home. And interestingly, men were more grateful to their wives than wives were to their husbands. Now, my interpretation was that wives do so much more that their husbands should be more grateful, but there may be other interpretations to that. So it's a great question, and I would love to pursue that and find out, because I would imagine there are big cultural differences internationally, and I just don't know the answer.
This woman. Wondering about your year of research, and during the year, were you suggesting or to friends and family to be more grateful, or was it more of just your own process that you were going through and waiting kind of to see what would happen for you and then making those suggestions like coffee and the shoveling and things like that?
My friends were really kind to put up with me for that year. Because there's very little I spoke about other than gratitude. I've never smoked, but I imagine I was like a reformed smoker. And one of the things that happens when you are starting to look positively at things is that it drives you crazy when people are not looking positively. And I actually tell the story in the book about a friend of mine who, and I did change her name, it's the only name in the book that I changed, though she did recognize herself, who is just, she's a wonderful woman, she's a dear friend, but she's very negative. So, and because I was starting to see things in a different way, I almost couldn't talk to her anymore when she would tell me that her office moved and she now has to go downtown and she can't stand going downtown. And I would say, you have a car service that takes you downtown and you have a fabulous job as a lawyer and people would kill for your job. Why don't you look at that? And she just couldn't get it. And it was really, it almost broke up our friendship. I wrote about it in the book, and she called me. And in fact, we had dinner the other night, and she said, I'm Dana, right? Wasn't that who I am in the book? I've changed. I'm not like that anymore. But, you know, there's some happiness research that says that how happy you are, if you want to know who you really are, look at the five people surrounding you, and you are an average of your five friends. And that may be true with gratitude also, that if you surround yourself with grateful people, you're more likely to feel grateful. If you surround yourself with happy people, you're more likely to feel happy. But I do think, on the other hand, you don't have to lose your friends. I think it is something that is contagious, and I do think it is something that you can remind people of and that can be part of something fun that you do together and that you do remind each other of how to look at things positively. And again, gratitude should never be a burden. It should never be, oh, I have to write in my gratitude journal tonight. It should be fun. And if it starts to be a burden, look at, try to do something else. If you don't want to keep a gratitude journal, then, as I said, use social media, take pictures, find a different way. But have your friends involved, and I think it can make a difference. Yes, one more.
Thanks. I know you're working in a secular way, but I just want to make the observation that in the old Jewish morning service, which happens every day somewhere, and sometimes in our homes, a third to a quarter of that morning service, it begins with statements and restatements of all different kinds of gratitude. So I would represent that gratitude is the way to open us to a spiritual life or to deepen a spiritual life.
I think that's absolutely right, and I've actually had I've had two rabbis who have sent me sermons that they've given where they were kind enough to talk about my book and about gratitude. I had a priest who recently wrote me on through my website a few days ago, asking me for permission to use something from my book. I didn't know I needed to give a priest permission, but I did. And I had an Episcopal minister come up to me at a speech recently and say gratitude is so much a part of our religion. So I do think it is part of the human condition, and I think that we all find ways in whatever way we can to express gratitude. Religion, secular manners, spiritual matters, mind-body ways, I think we're all looking for the same thing, which is how to find a way to live our lives to the fullest, to make ourselves the happiest people that we can be, the most fulfilled people that we can be. And if there's a way that you can find that with gratitude, I think it's a wonderful thing. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Our gratitude to Janice Kaplan for being with us today. We're also grateful to our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 113th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.